as it is happening right now, there's a convergence of technologies from machine learning to AI to quantum computing to edge computing, you name it. They all do one thing. They connect things. They connect everything.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
In this episode, we talk to Erich Joachimsthaler, a recovering academic and founder and CEO of Vivaldi Group, an amazing agency that has worked with the likes of American Express, Disney, Airbnb, Lego, you name it. He's also the author of The Interaction Field, which is being released as this episode goes live, so be sure to pick it up. It's a really interesting work, which discusses the companies who will be winning in the marketplace of tomorrow. They'll be generating, facilitating, and benefiting from data exchanges, from customers and stakeholders, but also from those you wouldn't expect to be in the mix, like suppliers, regulators, and even competitors. I learned a great deal from this interview, and chances are you will too, so let's jump right in. Welcome to Future Proof.
Thank you, Jeremy.
First thing I'd like to ask everybody, probably know the drill, but who are you and what do you do on a day-to-day basis? How do you really define yourself?
How do you define yourself? Tough questions to begin with right there. I'm a former academic. I've been in this country at various business schools, Harvard Business School, University of Virginia, University of Southern California, so all over the place, if you will, and also in Europe. And then 20 years ago, I came to New York City and I started a company because I wanted to put in practice what I was teaching for so many years. And that's what I do. We have a global firm. We work with companies that have to redefine themselves, to rethink. We work with brands from American Express to Jägermeister to Budweiser to big commercial companies like GE or John Deere or these kind of companies, a traditional business and also a startup companies, but primarily how companies evolve over time. That's what I do.
And I think it's obviously got to be really rewarding work. And I like also that you have, there's so many people such as myself who I think start an agency thinking they know what they're talking about. But the very fact that you just studied this for such a long time before you tried to put it into play for a number of leading brands, I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah.
But I know that you talk a lot about how we're in the third internet age of interconnectivity, which I find really interesting. So how does a company best acknowledge that reality, the moment that we're in, and then act accordingly?
There's a massive shift that has taken place, almost in a way unnoticed to me. It's almost like gradually happened, like so many things. In 95, when I came to this country, there was Amazon that started this and developed a technology called e-commerce in some ways. And then was Google that sort of helped us to find stuff on the internet. The beginning, and that basically connected information online. And then the second stage was when social came around, iPhones and, of course, Facebook, and that connected people. And if you now look in the current stages, everything connects. And the connectivity increases astronomically or exponentially, we would say. And this connectivity is that not only consumers connect, also machines connect, companies connect, and it's all global. And I think we all experience this, but as it is happening right now, there's a convergence of technologies from machine learning to AI to quantum computing to edge computing, you name it. They all do one thing. They connect things. They connect everything. And companies recognize this now. Companies really realize that the value they create is no longer in the factory, in pushing out another product. There are so many cars already on the road. We don't need another car. There are so many, every product category is, there are so many versions already out there. There are 175 mattress companies like Casper, let's say. 175 direct-to-consumer mattress companies. There are meal kit solutions that delivers meal to your home like Blue Apron. There are another 150 of those out there. There are so many models out there and businesses right now. So you don't create your value now through the traditional way. The way you build new value and you recognize this opportunity is through leveraging that connectivity. So there are many examples that, of course, go along with it.
Yeah, so you have a new book, which I think is important, obviously, to talk about. And what I find really fascinating to me about that is you talk about a new business model, an operating model for the future, one that creates shared value for all. And I think that That's very of the moment to be talking about that. But I think obviously you're somebody who's observed the market from a macro standpoint, and you can prescribe to people a little bit what that entails, what that's going to look like.
Maybe I use an example. Think of a traditional business like farming, agriculture. Maybe you are in New York and I'm New York. It's a little more distant for us, but we all live off agriculture. It's a key part of our food supply chain. John Deere is a company that traditionally has been well known for tractors that help harvest and help farmers. But one of the big developments in a company like John Deere and at John Deere is that they now collect, through sensors, they collect data about the field from farmers and the water irrigation, the soil condition. They aggregate, they do that for thousands and thousands, 100,000 of farmers. They aggregate those data, they add new data to it, say weather data. And then what they do is they share this back to farmers. And then not only, and this is the exciting part, not only helps this farmers to improve the productivity of the land and the profitability of the land, it also helps John Deere to collaborate with, let's say, Monsanto. Now it's called Bayer, the crop company, and says, for what kind of fields, what kind of crop is ideal? It helps them, fertilizer companies, to make sure that you don't throw fertilizers by the pounds on the field, you know, to destroy, if you will, the land, but actually dose the fertilizer as it is needed and to grow the plant. And so this kind of development connects an entire interaction field of farmers, of John Deere, of other companies, all toward solving a major problem, namely the productivity of the land.
To me, what's very interesting about that is that there are some companies who I think have thought this way, who've embraced this ethos for a while, and they've reaped the benefits. And yet there are still some companies that have been pretty successful without embracing this. And this is going to be, I think, obviously more important going forward for the reasons that you outlined. But can you get into the heart of the ethos of what are the values that are promoted by the type of company that gets this, that is going to be successful in this type of environment?
Yeah, I think that there's a fundamental shift now from this one type of company that says we build a good product and we push it out. We have a better car, we have a better or cheaper car, or we have better groceries, cheaper, we deliver something in a better, faster, and cheaper way. And that has been a paradigm for many years. These kind of companies, they say, the interaction field companies that I talk about, is they say, wait a moment, we are not really solving here the problems of consumers and maybe even society at large. We actually, by producing faster, cheaper cars, we also harm the environment, let's say. And we need to, these new companies, they say, we need to build a model, an operating model and a business model that actually takes all of this into consideration. And if you think of John Deere as an example, the improvements of productivity and the profitability of a farm has significantly improved through that system. So that's great. That's great for John Deere. That's great for farming. But it also solved many of the industry problems. Namely, the industry problems is that everybody tries to sell to the farmer more than they actually need. So now a company like that says, we are not in the business of selling you another tractor for $600,000. We are in the business of helping to improve the farm. So it's a different mindset. When you think about that, you truly thinking from the farmer's perspective. And there is much more to it. We use less fertilizer, which is actually good for the farms and good for the land. We actually improve the water irrigation. 60% of the water that is used to irrigate the land is not actually reaching the plant, only 40%. So there's a vast resource inefficiency. And we produce better food that actually helps serve the world hunger in some ways. So there's a statistic that I found that this is tremendous. If American farms could improve the productivity from about 3,500 kilo cereals per hectare to 7,000, which is possible through this new model, we could eliminate world hunger. American farms are so many that they could serve the rest of the world and there would be no more hunger around the world. And we also know that to 2050, the population is increasing, so the demand for food is increasing. And only through this new system, these new companies, we can actually solve for some of these bigger problems that exist today or in the future.
I'm wondering, why is it so important for the successful companies of tomorrow to have strong interactions and data exchanges with these suppliers, software developers, regulators, and even competitors? Because certainly you made a case for a little piece of the value chain there. But yeah. I thought it was very interesting to say that you make this case with competitors and regulators. So can you go into those aspects a little bit?
When you're in the traditional model, you have a pipeline or value chain, you're pushing out a product, and that value chain over the years has been optimized, digitized. There's very little value you can create in that model. The value now is created through the sharing of the data, analytics, and technology, through technology. And this is a value creation from the supply side to the demand side. And when in the old model, let's say the government, let's say the U.S. Department of Agriculture, as a representative of the government, was sort of external. You did your business and you need to do it within the regulation and constraints of the government. And guess what happens? The way it works is that the government has to subsidize farms because farms are not profitable. Many farms are not profitable. And so there's a lot of money going into just subsidizing farms. In the new model, you actually make the farms, the Department of Agriculture, part of the solution. They're part of an integrated, connected system. And so there's data sharing, there's technology sharing, and that creates a system, an interaction field company, in my opinion, in my wording, that actually solves for all these problems. And that also solves for the right subsidies for the right farmers, for example, that sort of solve for the entire system rather than just for how can I maximize my profits and my share of, if you will. So it creates an efficiency. So, this advantage of, or this way of creating value only exists in the last few years, that because now the connectivity has arrived at a level where these kind of advantages can be realized.
So one thing I wanted to ask you is that you make a good case for some of these companies that maybe are not in the public eye, especially to people like you and I in the little New York bubble. Mm-hmm. How about within the technology world? I'm thinking the major tech platforms that a lot of people talk about. Are they interaction field companies or does it depend? I'm wondering if you can judge the health of that industry and say there are certain players that are adopting this type of mindset.
Yes. So the technology companies, these tech companies actually have been leading these ideas because they have the technology, they're living off it. Apple is oftentimes an example. Apple has a pipeline. They produce a beautiful iPhone right there. I just got yesterday the 11, so a little late. But what makes the iPhone so successful? It isn't just that you actually look. I went from an iPhone 6 to an iPhone 11 as a good example. I don't think it's that much different. Somebody told me I should get a better camera and whatever, and so I did it now. I just made the change yesterday. But isn't that different? But what makes this so valuable? It is actually the App Store, or all the apps that I can play on it. And the App Store is actually one of those interaction fields. The App Store makes the iPhone successful because there are 40,000 developers that write programs. Write programs for the App Store that you and I then download. So Apple is successful not just because they have good design and all of these things, and they bring out new versions. But the success of Apple is that they have orchestrated an ecosystem in the action field that allows others to contribute. Very similar, Bayer and fertilizer companies contribute to the field of a farm. I think so. All these companies, Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google, they all have leveraged this new tech connectivity to their advantage, and that's why they are the most valuable company. Amazon is a good example. Did you know that Amazon, in their traditional business, their traditional retail business, where they buy a book and then sell a book, let's say, that business, they're actually losing money. The money they make is from the 6 million sellers, like you and I. They call it third-party sellers. And all they do is they facilitate an exchange between you, the buyer, me or you, and a third-party seller that may sell balloons, let's say, Party City as an example. And that's where they make their money. So it is actually just connecting to matching and connecting buyers and sellers. That's where they make money. In their traditional retail business, they're losing the money.
So this just gets me thinking. Is it possible for a company to almost learn the wrong things, if you will, from their success at being an interaction field company. And an example is the recent discussion about the App Store policies for really big apps that you start to add some value as a developer, and then you want a bigger piece of the pie. So how does a company essentially try to make sure that this relationship stays harmonious once yes. they've built relationships with all these different partners? How do they keep it going in the right direction over the long term?
Yes. So one of the biggest discussions we have right now is exactly that point. I'm glad you mentioned that, Jeremy. And that the question is, what is the governance? What are the rules of relationship? In the traditional world, it is, I create a product, a car that is valuable to you, and you pay me a premium price or a price for it. And that's a transaction. In this new world, is the biggest problem we are facing as a society in business right now is to provide the right governance structure of these exchanges. And there is a lot going wrong right now, in my opinion, with many of these platforms, because these platforms, they serve primarily shareholders. They're trying to, rather than serving the larger interaction field that they are playing in. And that's the discussion we are talking about here. These are the current discussions right now. They're part of policy discussions, regulations, or regulators discuss this. It's a little bit outside of my scope. I'm not an economist. I'm not involved in policy. I'm not in the law. But I think these discussions is important. As a business person, what you must do is you must build a system that not only captures and creates value, but also shares out value. And that is possible. But you need to build those governance rules. And I think we haven't, unfortunately, these governance rules break down at the moment in a number of instances. But anyway, there are good examples and there are negative examples that Jeremy to that question. Yeah.
And one of the last things I wanted to ask you, because I find all of this really fascinating, is you describe yourself as a positive contrarian. Okay. And how does that mindset allow you to be a better futurist on behalf of your clients, on behalf of books like this and all of your academic work? I'm wondering how that mindset helps in general.
Yeah. So the way I look at the world is this, you know, I always say, what's broken here? You know, or what is working? And so this being a positive contrarian is, you need to always say, is there an opposite point of view? Is there something else? And so if in this example is, we said selling more cars can be the solution. Putting more cars in New York City cannot be the solution. That creates a lot of congestion. Uber has created a lot of congestion. When you look at the number of cars, there is like 80,000 Ubers and Lyft cars on the road right now, a much smaller percentage of Medallion cars. And that has created a lot of congestion if you look around New York City. So, and then I say that it can't be that we're just like putting more cars on the road, especially in New York City. So then the question becomes, what solves for that? And again, if you just look selfishly and say like, look, I just want to make a business of riders and drivers like Uber and Lyft, and then you're like solving, then you build a business, but you're actually harming also the larger challenges we have in this market. And so in my world, I said, what would be a model that actually still gives you a good business, but also takes into consideration, let's say, the situations we live in New York City, you know, the congestions on and things. And when you arrive at that, then you say, so that requires an interaction field company. That requires that the cars you put on the road or the drivers you recruit so that you will have riders in an example of Uber, that you also work closely together with the city government and say, how do we actually optimize the availability of transportation across the thing? So then you're not looking at it at me and my company and how can I make money in New York City. You're looking at it as a, and then subject to the regulation that the things we need to lobby and beat or ignore, if you will, which sometimes works like that. Instead, you say, like, how do we work within an ecosystem, in an interaction field, with the city government, with the police authorities and New York police and so forth, or urban planners, and says, how do we actually create a value for the consumers like you and me who live in New York City, who need transportation, subject to all those other players in the field? And that is now possible because we all are connected and through this, as we started at the beginning. So that positive contrarian requires you to have this mindset of how do we really solve for the problems that we face in a system rather than just how do I maximize my own best interests, if you will.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the way that your mind works is you're naturally thinking of the unintended negative consequences coming out of something like an Uber, and then thinking, how can a company like an Uber mitigate those things rather than just letting them be out there as negative consequences?
Yeah, think about it, Jeremy. When Uber, we all use Uber and the technology now, they know where we are, where we go, when we travel, and so forth. Those information, they are changing daily. And that information, wouldn't that be very valuable to the city government and to police departments, if you will, to manage the flow of traffic and know where? So wouldn't it be nice to, instead of saying, look, how do I beat the regulation, labor laws, if you will, wouldn't it be nice to actually share those data on a daily basis so that actually we can all get around the city in a much more efficient way and whatever transportation it may be. And it's like data, analytics, the connectivity that we talk about here, this hyper-connected world we live in, is allowing us now to solve for those problems that we never solved before. I think, and that's the beauty of where we are going now.
Just like our high-speed internet is allowing us to do this interview from three blocks away. But honestly, Eric, this is fascinating. And hopefully sometime soon, the world will be a little bit safer for us to do an interview like this from even 5 feet apart. So
imagine we wouldn't have that connectivity. How much harder the pandemic would have hit us. And I think it allows us. There's a good thing, actually, that comes out of these technologies that we sometimes love and sometimes dread, I guess.
It's 2020. There's not a lot to be thankful for, but we can be thankful for that. But yep. This is really fascinating. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thanks again to Erich for making the time. I really enjoyed this conversation. Really fascinating topic. If you like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and V. Cortuccio. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.